to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here to my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike!
Next to him, we've got Brandon Bertheim.
Hey, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Ken Kane joining us again. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Next to him, we've got Bill Burgess.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And
yeah.
Next to Bill, we've got the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast. How to keep that in there?
Oh, yeah.
Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Rob is working on show number 81, guys. Ooh, 81.
81. That's amazing.
The triathlete of the podcast.
Man, it seems like it's been forever since we've done a podcast.
And you said the paycheck was coming after show 80, right?
Yes.
there's a shelf of residuals that's just going to kick in.
That's right. Yeah. Right after show number 100.
Oh.
Anyhow, guys, well, it's good to be with you guys. It's been a while.
It's good
to
be too.
It's
nice.
Been a while.
How have you been, Mike?
I've been good. Busy.
That's killer.
Not as busy as you, though. I know you're working on some cool stuff that you can't talk about, but we'll talk about that later. We'll not talk about that later.
Yeah, there it isn't.
There it ain't.
It's not over here.
Anyhow, for those of you that are listening to us for the first time, the Audio Nowcast is a podcast where we talk about the audio industry from a insider's point of view. And we all here work in one form or the other. We've got sound designers, songwriters, composers, engineers. And guys, today, on today's show, we're going to cover a little bit of everything because our guests couldn't make it, but. But also we have some business to take care of. The first thing I want to point out is, I don't know if you remember a few shows ago, talking about the Men at Work, lawsuit.
Oh yeah. What happened with that?
Well,
who
I don't
can
know.
It be now?
Exactly. I don't know what happened with the lawsuit per se, but I did get an email from a listener, and I got to give him a shout out. His name is Bill Collar. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. And he wrote, "Hi guys, love the podcast. Absolutely love it."
Oh, so right there, he has no credibility. And then what?
Anyhow, he wrote, "When I first heard about this lawsuit, I thought it was ridiculous too, because it seemed to me the Men at Work song was using a similar riff in a minor key, and the original song was major. Then I went to the piano and played the original song. Bar 2 is exactly the same as the riff used in the song, and I believe it is the 5 consecutive notes rule." Is that true? Is there a 5 consecutive notes?
There was 9 consecutive notes, but I think that might have changed to...
And then,
intent,
and then he continues, melodically and rhythmically, it's a match, and the song was not public domain, so...
Well, he's right. If it feels like it's infringement, it is.
It is intent.
It shows intent. It was obviously not an accident.
No.
And it shows intent.
I mean, and it says, you know, take care, all the best, BillCollar.com. Bill Collar, and he's BillCollar.com. A piano player, so I would definitely take his word for it because I listened to his stuff and it was pretty good. But he brings up a good point that if it, you know, the 5 consecutive notes, is that indeed, you
it's
know,
changed.
Will that hold
the,
up?
The technicalities have changed, but here's the bottom line. If you know you're lifting something from another piece of music, which they knew they were lifting from another piece of music, there's a good chance you're going to get busted if the song makes a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And that's what it all comes
but
down to.
But it's such
to.
A small part of that. If you listen to the song, it's such a small part. I don't
yeah.
know. It's,
I haven't heard it. Actually, I'm completely out of the loop. I don't even know what the song is or what you're talking about. Which song is it? We're going to be in no.
No.
We don't remember either.
No, no.
It's Land Down Under.
Land Down Under.
I come from a land down under.
Exactly.
It's the flute riff, right?
It's
flute solo.
Exactly.
Yeah. So somebody else is using that lick?
Well, that's...
It's from another song.
It's from another song.
They actually used the recording or the notes they played?
The similar melody.
Yeah, apparently it's an older song in...
Traditional song,
yeah, traditional song.
Is it good? Tribal song.
But not traditional enough to be
public
domain.
Oh, so Men at Work is getting sued.
Yes.
Exactly.
Aha!
30 years after they spent the money.
And that's the thing. It took them 25 years and only happened because the rights transferred to a attorney's office, right?
Right.
Rather than the original songwriter.
Well, all I know is that there's it's going to be locked up in some, the courts for a while because there's a lot of issues that they have to talk about. Just because, A, even if it was a direct lift, the original author of the song actually didn't mind it from what I've been reading. And it was kind of like a tribute, and they were using it. They specifically picked that song.
They might not lose the case on that.
Yeah, but they picked that song not necessarily to rip them off, but actually to pay homage to their culture, because it's such a stable it's such an important song in their culture. So
it seems weird that it would be a traditional song that, and it's not public domain. So it must have been a pop song at one point.
Yeah, or something. I don't know. I just think
we don't have enough details.
Like exactly, like Brandon was saying, 25 years later, it's a money grab, though. Come on, it's a money grab. Yeah. That's all it is. So we'll see how that how that runs. By the way, Forrest, welcome. He kind of snuck in like a mouse while we were talking.
Snuck in like a mouse indeed.
6 foot mouse.
I heard that Bobby Somerville was back.
And I am $20. That's why he's coming back.
Well, anyhow, I just want to thank Bill for writing in and
sharing. Yeah, Bill, thank you for rising in.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, well, let's move on. I have to talk to you about something really quick. I want your input. This past weekend, I went and did something that I haven't done in years. And
no, you didn't.
I went to Guitar Center and I bought a microphone from Guitar Center. Yes, I did.
Wow.
And it was – I got to tell you about this experience because it was – I just want to share it so that people are aware how to buy a microphone from Guitar Center. Mm. I went to Guitar Center and I was looking for a dynamic microphone. Now, a lot of microphones that I have are condensers, you know, and
– You can make them dynamic if you want. You just don't plug in the power.
It didn't work very well.
Is that it? I was wondering. There you go. So I was looking for a handheld microphone for some interviews because we're going to be doing some interviews and I need to have a wireless handheld. And so I went over to Guitar Center and I did the dumbest thing by asking them behind the counter.
I heard it coming.
What do you recommend for
exactly,
microphones?
That's exactly. I went, because you know what? Really, some of those guys, I know some guys that work at Guitar Center, and some of them, you know, they're just trying to make a buck, and they're pretty knowledgeable, and they've been around the stuff. Well, anyhow, I went and I asked them about a good dynamic handheld microphone, and the guy immediately shot back, and it just so happened to have been stacked on the counter right there. He goes, "Oh, these Audix are really good." And they were normally $99 on sale for $90, you know, and he goes, "Yeah, it's a really great microphone. It'll sound really good. It's really crisp, and you're not going to have any problems with it. It's a great all-around microphone." And I go, "Well, how does it compare to some of the other ones?" He goes, "It's, you know, in my opinion, it's the best bang for your buck. It's going to sound the best. You're going to really like it." And then I said, "Okay, I'd like to see that one, but let me check out the AKG D5, the Shure Beta 57, and the Sennheiser that they had, like the E38. And so he's pulling them out. And then I go, "And is there, can I listen to this somewhere? Is there a PA in here you guys have hooked up so I can, you know, listen to them, to the microphones?"
We don't do that.
Well, no, he totally kind of rolled his eyes, but he went over and to his credit, he plugged me in.
Great effort.
So I went over there and I plugged it in. And the first microphone I plugged in was the Audix. And let me just tell you, it was just horrible. It was horrible. And you know what? I will say Audix makes some good mics. There's some mics that they make for the price. But it was bad. And I was just amazed right then and there. I knew I was going to talk about this because, you know, a lot of times when we go out and we buy gear, as soon as we walk into a Sam Ash or a Guitar Center or a Mars Music or whatever your choice of big music stores, we tend to give so much credibility to the people behind the counter, but really you gotta, it's all to your own ears. You gotta do it.
It's been
yourself.
A long time since I've given credibility.
Yeah. I gotta say, I haven't done that ever.
Oh, you're right. Let me take that back. I'm just talking about Joe Consumer. I'm talking about the home studio guy. There's guys, the serious guys, you're right. You do your homework. But a lot of times, you know.
I mean, you're just begging to be a victim.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, you deserve to be.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what the hell mic you want to get, then. Dude.
Yeah, well,
guys like that need to get a subscription to Tape Op and read up.
Well, that's true. And I was just amazed at how blatantly, you know, maybe he was getting spiffs on the mics or something. I mean, maybe there was.
How much of a spiff can he be getting on a $90 mic?
Those mics must be $7.
Well, probably, you know, he could get like $10 on the mic or something.
Well, you don't understand. $5. I mean, management somewhere says, "Hey, we got to move these on.
Yes, move this product."
That's the thing of the week is they got to push those. And then there's somebody that watches their number. These guys got to make a number.
Yeah. Well, I just want to
watch what goes out and what kind of stuff.
Don't know the difference, though.
Yeah.
We really don't.
And I just want to warn people. You know, if you go out there, like most of our listeners, I will say, are probably informed enough that they don't do that. But we have a lot of, like, get a lot of emails from a lot of you know, newbies and a lot of people that have just got into it, or maybe moms that, you know, or
why would they be buying microphones? That's what I want to
know. I mean, they could be buying
for the
a
kids?
Mic for a gift for their kids or something.
Oh, okay.
But, like that.
Motherhood podcast?
But in the end, you know, I listened to all those mics, and actually the one that won was surprising. It was the Shure.
It's not surprising. It's one of the most popular mics on earth.
Yes, but sometimes, you know, the obvious big brand, you just think, oh, other things are going to come over and knock it off its pedestal. But nope, it was
the Beta 57. The 57, you got the 57?
Yes, the Beta 57. It's a great mic.
57 is awesome, and some of the Heils are great dynamics.
I heard the Heils were really good, too.
They're awesome.
Bayers. Sennheisers too.
The second one was the AKG was up there. It actually AKG sounded really had a really warm a good low end. Just didn't it wasn't hot enough. It didn't have enough power coming out. But the Shure is a great mic.
Man. Yeah, there's a reason they've sold a trillion of them.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a reason why.
And you know, Shure 58, the old SM58.
Right.
You can use them for so many things that people.
Yes, you can.
Including Bono's vocal.
Oh no, absolutely. I'm talking about studio use as well, not just live. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Feedback rejection, but fantastic.
I would record vocals on a Beta 57.
We've done it plenty of times.
They have a good edge. I mean, it really cuts. I was amazed. It was really like, wow.
The compression of a dynamic mic is lovely. Yeah.
And you know what? And there's nothing better than being able to plug a mic in, talk into it, unplug it, plug another one in, talk right then and there, comparing them. I mean, you just learn so much about the characters of microphones and you know, a darker mic and a brighter mic, you know, and it's just, I just encourage you, if you're going to ever go and you know, buy microphones, really don't, even when you buy online, you should go and hear the mic that you're trying to buy, because that's one of the good things I will say about Guitar Center is I was able to go in there and listen to all these mics.
How'd you hear it over all those blazing guitar solos?
There was no blazing guitar solos. And the you know, the pro recording usually is...
The Did you go to Hollywood?
No, I was down in Fountain Valley.
Well, there you go. I'm just kidding.
Just by the way, I got a hookup for guitars, and I got a buddy that works. He's very, very good. He used to be my assistant, recording engineer. He's very knowledgeable as a recording engineer. If you need any input, he's the dude to go and ask.
Is he at Sunset or where is he at?
For Hollywood, yeah.
Hey, I found a mic shock. Maybe that's too big a word, but for me it was kind of a shock. It was right after I called you, Rob, on whenever that was. I was in a panic because I needed to record some of my own drum tracks for some music, because I was supposed to go hook up with a guy over at his place, and I just kind of hit the thing where, hey, are we going to go ahead and do this? Well, okay, forget it. Okay, whatever. So I had to go somewhere where I could just set up and start playing, but I needed both bass drums because I like the double. I love the single. I love having two individual bass drums for double bass, right? But
yes.
I was mismatching on the mics. I had
you had two different mics?
I had the D112.
And a 58.
No, and a 52. And I was like, okay. And I didn't need both bass drums. It was just like, because I just wanted that sound. And I have like a double pedal. It was like some pretty intense double bass stuff. And I'm like, oh, I have my pedal out in the car, if that's what it gets down to. But, man, I put the D112 on the left kick. I had the Beta 52 on the right. And I like the sound of the Beta 52 because, I don't know, for some reason I get more... I don't know, low end or something. It's just a little warmer to me or whatever. D112, I've never actually heard outside of a club or an arena or something like that. So by the time the sound got to me, I felt like I was hearing other things instead of just the mic. The D112 just kind of blew the Beta 52 out of the water. I don't know why, but I got more oomph. I got more volume. I got more everything.
You know, we've tried probably 20 different mics on kicks, and the D112 always ends up winning in the long run.
I got one myself.
No, they're both 18 by 22 Gretsch.
There's something about – there are other mics that sometimes sound like they're more thunderous or they might sound better, but when it's time to actually hear it in with the rest of the kit and hear it on a track, there's just something about a D112
that sits in a track.
That's really just perfect.
It was crazy because you're supposed to, like, you know, have the – here's
the hole in the kick drum. I had the Beta 52,
right,
like sort of just at or just inside sort of the hole, like not in the bass drum, like a lot of people cram. The D112 is an inside the bass drum.
Every bass drum is different. We usually just get on our knees, put our head
to the bass drum,
and just hear where it sounds right and put the mic there.
Right.
That's the right way to do it.
It was just... I was shocked. I was like, wow, okay. Well, I was going to match the 52, but it sounds like I need to match the D112. So yeah. I only have three right now. Right. I have the SM91 in addition to those two. But any input on that, why that is, am I out of my mind or what?
Different impedance, different microphones. I mean, different bodies of the mics sound different. You know, I mean, it's impossible to even compare the two. It's like saying a Strat and a Telecaster. They're going to sound different.
I would say also, I don't know this, but maybe even a bigger diaphragm. I mean, a D112 is not a small mic. They really can handle the air a lot. And man, a lot of tours I know that I've been on, they've used the D112.
You know the truth of it, a kick drum, the internal miking of the traditional one mic miking system that you're talking about, traditionally, a kick drum is one of the easiest things to get a good sound on, believe it or not. A lot of people think, oh, it's real hard to get a good sound on a kick drum. It's really not that hard.
Yeah,
because
I agree with
a lot
you.
Of people stick the kick drum mic in, like the D112, the D12s, the RE20s. There's a whole bunch of MD421s. You can stick them inside the kick drum, and then at the end of the day, it's just like one large air blow and a click. And it's like, oof, and it sounds fantastic. And you can really get that sound from just blowing into a mic, more or less.
Right.
So it's not the hardest thing in the world to get a great kick drum sound. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to fool yourself. So I suggest playing around with placement of your mic, of different mics, whereas the D112, as you say, in the kick sometimes sounds good. And play around with maybe putting a FET 47 or something outside the kick drum.
Yeah, I would like that.
You get a bit more air. You know,
you've
got to
get
more
the bloom.
Yeah, exactly. You do, because it doesn't sound like that disco sound, which I love, but it doesn't sound like that sort of cut off from the rest of the drum kit sound.
Mm. You know, that's a great point, Bobby, as far as, like, sometimes we overthink these sounds, you know? Especially with a kick drum, you know? You go to some mixes and you see the guy who has the compression and the EQ and, you know, is trying to carve out that, you know, the roundness and then pop up the high end to get a little bit of the spike. And sometimes you just get it. It's
sometimes
all about,
just put the mic in the right place. Put the mic in the right place and you'll be done. But, I mean, it's fantastic. EQ and it's great. I mean, I'm not knocking that. It's definitely fantastic. But, you know, a real good drum kit, I mean, I'm not lying to you. If you've got a decently nice-sized diaphragm microphone, you know, if you could afford to put up like a 47 or something decent, but either way, just say a 414 for want of a better mic. Put it in front of the drum kit, a couple of feet off the floor, in front of the drum kit. One microphone with no phasing problems, and with no pads or no EQs on it. And have a listen to it and see if the drum kit sounds balanced. And if it sounds fat, you'll be so surprised how great that sounds. And you really only need to add a little bit of kick drum into that, and you'd have a fantastic drum sound. Granted, it won't be stereo and have like hi hats coming out the left and right.
Yeah,
that's another great sound, which is fantastic too. But
is that a good way to actually to see if your kit is set up correctly? I mean, let's say you have enough mics to mic everything, but before you do that, stick one mic up and
when I do drums, I always listen to my ambient mics mostly, and then I start filling it in like I'm doing an orchestra. Mm-hmm. Like I'd have a Decca tree on an orchestra, and then I'd fill in solos or try and get the cellos or whatever it would but let me not falsify the fact I actually do separate mic drum kits. Obviously, we all do. But I do listen to the ambience mics, and I do have a mono. Always have a mono mic. Like when I actually cut Forrest the other year. But I put like a ribbon mic behind his head. Mic above your head. And I listen to that, and I'm going, okay, I can hear his drum kit balance. Because some drummers play up. They have the cymbals up in the air. They have the cymbals down. Some play tight. Some play wide. So it sometimes it's a bit confusing for the mic. So, you find a sweet spot. But it's a fantastic yardstick to go back to. And to get your ears tuned to what correct phasing of one diaphragm listening to one drum kit sounds like. Okay, what happens if I put the kick drum? Oh, it starts to sound fatter. Good. Oh, it doesn't get fatter. It gets worse. What's up?
What am I doing?
We're starting to get, you know, so I've got to move that mic closer. I've got to move. So you start to get your ear trained to what's really good sounding, and then screw it up from there. I agree. Definitely screw it up. Do whatever you want to do.
Right.
Creative. But
that's a great place to start. That's a great
Sometimes I think we all need to do that. We end up getting tweaky head too much, compress EQ, go, go, go. I love doing it. I absolutely do it 1,000%. But you listen to the raw thing and go, man, this sounds pretty good like this. Okay, how can I now start pushing the envelope? And you may in the end not actually use that ambient mic you have.
Right.
But it's there. It's fantastic.
I see. Went for straight ambient mic. Andy at the 3 feet off the ground, 3 feet away, yep. Omnidirectional.
Definitely. And not also forgetting about our friend, the old PZM microphones.
Oh, no kidding.
Stick that in front of it. I've got a little, especially little... Anyway, reflective piece of wood that I use, and I put a PZM on that in front of the drum kit. It's fantastic. It just sounds nasty. It's like,
see that? You're a genius, Bobby.
Yeah, right.
Bobby's a genius. Yeah, another little nugget. No, that's really, seriously, that's really a
very
great,
silly man
a
you
great.
Are.
No, that's a great tip for doing that one man. Mic though. That's a great tip because, man, I can't tell you how many times I've heard. You know, you go into a session and then they start. First thing they do is start adding all those mics to those drums. They don't even listen to the kit. Everything is, and then they're trying to solve problems with the EQ. And they're trying to solve.
You know, the
problems.
First thing you should do when you go into a drum kit. I mean, other than getting it tuned nicely,
move the
make
kit
sure
in the room.
Yeah, that's one thing. But other than the physical basics, I mean, I'm talking from an engineer's point of view. Yeah. Make sure that your mic cables are in phase, and you don't have any out of phase cables and out of phase microphones, because some microphones report out of phase compared to each other. So make sure that you have all your phasing. I have a couple of phase guns. Go and phase all your mics. Make sure the positive going half cycle issues a positive going half cycle on every single mic, so that if you put two mics in next, you know, two mics micing up one sound source, you're getting a coupling effect as opposed to something that's going to, because otherwise you're going to be going, oh, let me EQ this, it's not sounding fast enough. And really, all you're trying to do is just trying to time align the two microphones, and then you're just, you know, it becomes like one large pot of pain.
That's cool. You know what, though? But that's a really great idea, especially the fact that you say, you know, don't try to attack it with all EQ and things like that, because sometimes...
I'm not saying don't EQ.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm not
but,
a purist in that respect. But.
But don't, you know, sometimes you need to solve a simpler problem than... I was actually... Speaking of solving a simple problem, Ken was doing some mixing and he played me a CD that he just mixed, which was really good. But he was doing this mix and the bass, we were talking about the low end and the bass, you could hear the bass, but you really couldn't hear the bass. So I was talking to Ken about his choice for mixing the bass. And what Ken did, and I thought this was pretty genius, is the bass player, well, he wasn't tight, wasn't that good, and he was really clashing.
Hopefully he's not listening.
Exactly. No, it's not the bass player for the Dreamers. It was the one for he was working on, and he just wasn't working. So what Ken did, and I thought it was pretty genius, is
killed him.
He had a thicker bass drum, and he kind of left the bass guitar a little flabby. There wasn't a lot of attack on it, and so you just kind of got the presence of the low end with the kicks given the attack, and you couldn't hear how bad the bass player was. And I just thought that was a genius thing. Is sometimes you just got to leave stuff alone.
No,
definitely. Just don't overthink it. And
feel the bass anyway.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That was a good idea. I mean, have you guys, Rob, you ever done anything like that when you're working on your? No, you work with great musicians.
We're just trying to get a better bass player.
I corrected myself.
It's actually harder to make records with worse musicians.
It really is.
It's a deep challenge. Limited gear and bad musicians, and to make records in that respect, it's brutal. I did that for about 10 years with bad musicians, and it's not easy.
It's definitely not something to aspire to.
it is the trenches. That's what that's what you do. If you can make it sound good, then you're on your way.
Yeah, there is a technical tool that you can do for those sorts of problems, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with, which is called keying. And that's where you actually have the kick drum, and you have a kick drum, and you have a compressor on the bass that has its threshold determined from the kick drum.
So,
but you actually put in a duck mode so that the actual kick drum actually triggers the volume of the kick of the bass rather. So if you're playing doom, the bass player's boom, ba boom, ba boom, whatever, and the kick drum's saying doof, doof, doof. The bass will actually be keyed louder on the kick drum.
So it'll actually seem like
he's tighter. And also when the kick drum's not there, the volume of the bass comes down. So if he's flailing around, he's like, hey, no, you're only playing to my kick drum. You can adjust the threshold or the dynamic difference. And you make it like 3 or 4 to 6 dB.
Right.
So it helps doing that. That's a common trick from back in the day.
Yeah, we've done that.
Even when people can play well, you do that for dance records and stuff like that. It's fun.
Give genius.
I love it.
Well, hey, listen, we're gonna take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're gonna finish our potpourri of podcasting. But a little bit of everything. But Bobby, thanks for the tips.
You're more than welcome.
And we'll catch you on the other side.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were getting some fantastic tips from Bobby on
miking
drums and all kinds of stuff. Let's continue. I'm just going to keep knocking some of these things right off our list here.
Go on, then.
Things we're going to talk about. One thing I wanted to talk about along the lines of...
What's that list on your thing? It says buy sugar and milk.
Along the lines of mixing tips and tricks... Is I had a friend of mine recently. I mixed a commercial for Orbitz, and it's the travel site Orbitz. And one of the lines that came through was just horrible. There was a lot of ambience. They were shooting. There was generators. There was cars going by. So we had to ADR that line. And so I brought the actor back in, and we ADR'd it, and then I mixed it in, and then I mixed the ADR. And when you watch the commercial. It's the commercial that's running on cable where you see the guy in the raft. It's the guy in the raft that actually we had to ADR. You know, I mixed it in and I made it sound like he was outside. And so a friend of mine was talking to me about that, and he wanted to get some tips for doing that kind of ADR mixing for when you want to place people in different environments. And so I thought, you know what, I want to bring that up to the podcast and pick some people's brains. Because I know, like, for instance, to make this guy sound like he was floating on a raft – behind the actors, you know, the first thing you do is you roll off a lot of the low end because you're not going to have that low end there. You know, I boosted the around the K's because those are the frequencies that that travel the farthest, and then added just a little bit of reverb just to give them a little bit of presence in there. And that's pretty much, you know, if you do that for, you know, your dialogue, you're going to be able to place them outside. You're going to be able to lose that studio effect. Yeah, and that's how I place them outside, by basically taking a signal and stripping away a lot of the frequencies. I didn't add anything. I mainly stripped away the frequencies that you don't hear when you're at a distance. And I just wanted to open it up for you guys.
I can actually tell you, because we've done a fair amount of ADR, one of the beginner mistakes that people make in trying to replace dialogue or replace a sung vocal or whatever is that they figure because I'm in a studio, I've got to put the talent in front of the microphone and record it that way. But the truth is, like, if somebody was out on a raft, it was probably a shotgun mic,
yep,
you know, from the shore or from another raft or whatever. It's a really good idea to not only try to match the kind of microphone, like we'll bring in a shotgun if it's dialogue that was, you know, originally done with a shotgun mic. Try to match the microphone, but also try to match the distance from the microphone, because microphones sound very different. If you have a shotgun mic out in the field and somebody's 20 feet away,
yeah,
and then in the studio they're 2 feet away from it, it sounds like a different mic, even if it's the same.
Oh, you mean like this, or do you mean like this?
Wow. That was like 3D.
Although, I will also say, though, I totally agree with you 100%. But
then let's end it there.
No, but I will tell you, I couldn't on the one that I did, I couldn't actually have the actor back off because the VO booth sounds so bad.
Well, yeah, and there's limits. It's I was saying that's a beginner mistake.
No, absolutely.
So you're saying it might make the beginner mistake, basically what you're saying.
Well, you had no choice if the booth was small.
Right. Well, that's the thing is if the booth is small, if you don't have that room, I would go for the second thing is get as good a recording as you can, you know.
You know, we've done those sometimes, like in a situation like that, just put them in the office with you or put them in the control room.
No, that's true, because sometimes that ambience will actually add.
Yeah, it's fine.
To the,
do renegade audio. Everything doesn't have to be so clean. It wasn't that clean when he was out in a raft.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is your point being that it's a distance issue. Mm-hmm. So on a really close, tight mic like that, mm-hmm, I always go, I'm a cheater. I just go right to my convolution reverb. and I do it that way.
Just put in another space, yeah.
But you know what's amazing, though? You'd be surprised, and you can do it with reverb, but you'd be surprised how often you don't hear reverb where you think you would hear reverb.
Well, you don't hear a lot of people think you hear reverb outside, but you don't unless you're in a canyon.
Yeah, and I would just say if you're going to add reverb, just be really, you know, a little goes a long way.
Well, convolution, if I clap my hands outside in a swimming pool,
yeah,
and there's no reverb, and I add that in my convolution reverb, it gives me no reverb. But it gives me approximation of the distance. There's probably better ways to do it.
And no, I never
have it at 100%.
That's what early reflections are more important than the reverb tail for giving you the size of the place.
Right, and sometimes it's really hard to figure out what's going on. Like, what about this is not correct?
No, that's true.
And then, so if you open up a convolution, throw a couple different rooms on it, and this will get you headed into the right direction, even if you don't end up using it as a tool.
I did some recordings just a couple of months ago. I wanted some different sounds of percussion. So I went down my street with a bunch of drumsticks and some metal sticks, and I just had a little handheld Tascam recording thing, and I went and bashed on you know, trees and things like that, and I got back into the studio and made a couple little patches of these sounds, but I realized that all of them had really a strong, loud first reflection. But when I was out there, I'm thinking, oh, it's great, no reverb, and it's very, very true. You hear it, and you hear like, bah. You're like, oh, you hear it coming off the buildings way across the street, but it's really subtle, but very, 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 very characteristic of that outside sound, which is something you don't really do in digital reverbs. You go, oh, yeah, I switch those off. You don't actually get that subtlety from some of the digi reverbs.
No, that's true. You're right.
Trippy.
And everybody's using reverbs now as plugins primarily, but for a long time, you know, in the days when Eventide and Lexicon and TC and all these companies were going up against each other with reverbs that cost, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, the money was in the early reflections. You know, like TC Electronics would work for a year and come out with a new bunch of, early reflections that would be. It would really change the sound of the thing.
No, that's true.
They always had good tails, too. But
maybe you're a fan, maybe not. But a convolution reverb, and I'm speaking about the one I know the best, which is in Logic, doesn't have to have just a gunshot or a clap. If I drag drum beats into them. I drag French horn lines. I drag all kinds of stuff into the reverb. And what I'll do is if I want pumping reverb, I'll take the same beat, cut an eighth note off the beat so that it's on the up, and then I'll drop that into the convolution, and then I get, and I send a little bit to it, and then I get a reverb that pumps exactly with the beat.
Wow, that's cool.
And it's one of these things that's kind of beast. It's a beastly thing. Like I have this ambient trick where I take a really nice French horn line and I drop that into my convolution. And then in the same key, you play some nice ambient piano that's sent to that reverb. Every time a note goes down, you hear this ghost line of French horns in the background.
That's cool. Wow.
And so
that is cool.
The idea of saying reverb's got to be reverb, forget it. Right. It doesn't. You can do anything you want. You can drag voices into it, anything. And sometimes I've had, you know, five or six convolutions that have long French horn lines, and then the whole session will blow open because it just starts feeding back, and it can be unmanageable.
Wow.
But if you use it judiciously, obviously things like that take a lot of space.
Right.
So it's best used in spacious areas.
Right.
But you know what? Take the whole thing, run it through a MIDI-controlled gate, play a rhythm with it, done. And it's like an awesome effect. You get this really complex sound that has no rhythm to itself because it's so big and mushy and all over the place. But put it through a MIDI-controlled gate where you can control when the gate is open and closed.
Close, yeah.
And don't make it 100%. So the sound is always there some, but then you can play a rhythm where the sound pokes through.
That's right. That's another.
And the sound, then it becomes an instrument.
See?
Reverb can be an instrument.
Genius. Just genius all over the place.
Trevor Horn's been doing that for a long time, though. It's not new genius.
No, but I'm talking about with Bill's, you know, the French horn.
You used to do it with pianos and cowbells.
It's much easier to do these days, but it was always a cool thing.
That's true.
Keepix. Back in the day, Keepix.
Yeah. The only thing you can do to try to make it as hard as it was in the old days is just try it in Logic.
Exactly.
Oh, there we go. That was the first shot.
I haven't had any logic digs on
that. I've been taking it on the chin for some time.
Actually, talking about logic, and I'm always bagging on Pro Tools. I just bought Pro Tools, I recently bought Pro Tools 8.
Right.
And it's so much better than 7. They really improved
it
a lot.
It's one better.
It is. It's one better than that. It's really, really, really cool.
They don't have a version for Snow Leopard yet. Okay.
No, they do.
I do.
They
do.
803.
You gave it to me.
They may be past 803 now. Yeah, they have Snow Leopard.
I know the reason why it's better.
Why?
Because they made it look like Logic.
Yeah, some people that had some big decision powers are up there were actually monsters on Logic.
Oh, really? That's good.
So, well, if they take the same good ideas and just make them easier to use, that's
usable.
Fine.
More logical.
More logical, that's fine. Hey, everybody borrows from everybody.
That's sweet. Yes. No, Pro Tools 8 is
very
miraculous.
Nice.
It's really
very
good.
Nice.
I mean, it's much different.
I like the plugins. Like it sounded really good.
I have to try it. I'm still on 7.
New India still smokes it, but either way.
Go to 8, at least for the eye candy, please.
Yeah. No, you know, unless you're colorblind. That's one thing.
But you're the only guy I know that's that.
We all gather at night.
We see each other.
All right. Gather at night and run red lights and stuff.
Well, we're going to move on. Moving on in our potpourri of podcasts.
Really can't get any better than
this. This is like a high 57.
Absolutely. This is what happens when we don't have a guest.
We're in the company of ourselves.
All right. I want to talk about something that is kind of a pet peeve. And
another one.
And this one, ego. We're going to talk about ego. Ego
has landed.
We're going to talk about ego and ego getting in the way of people's success. And I don't know about you guys, but lately I've been coming across people that have way more ego than talent. Way more ego. And they're living in this.
You're lucky you're only coming across it now.
You mean that aren't instrumentalists primarily?
You know, here's the thing. With the reality celebrity that we have, people, you know, and YouTube and things like that, people just expect to be famous. There's people out there that just expect to be famous, and they let that attitude seep down into working with them. So if you're even trying to do a favor, they either get really picky or they don't appreciate what you're doing. And I just, you know, I watched this documentary, and there was a dancer that was trying out for a part, and he nailed the first audition, but then he came back for the second audition, and he was just kind of mailing it in because he thought he had the part because he was, you know, obviously so good, and he ended up not getting the part. And I just see time and time again, you know, this tremendous sense of entitlement that people have, and how ego is really destroying a lot of careers of people that could be actually really good. And I don't know. I just wanted to open it up for you guys to see if you had any advice to people who might think they're that.
Oh, yes.
And all you have to.
And aren't that.
Well.
Or how you can self-check to make sure your ego doesn't get out of control.
You know what? As someone who's done a bunch of artist development and gotten to meet a lot of different personalities and see the way different people react to the process, I mean, ego is a really important thing because it can drive you, you know, and somebody with drive can get further than someone without drive, even if the talent is, you know, even. And ego can overcome some talent. I mean, if you're really driven and you practice and you really, you know, work at something, or right, you really just keep doing it, you're going to get better at it and you're going to do better. But you have to learn, and it's not just in the entertainment industry, in any industry, you have to learn to take a step back and look from a sort of an outsider's perspective of where you are in the industry and what you bring to the industry and you know, who you are and what your talent is. You have to be able to be somewhat of a critic of yourself. And if your ego just overtakes you and you can't be objective about your talent and your skill and your success, then you have problems. I mean, I've known people to be walking around like they're just, you know, God's gift to the entertainment industry. You know, there's a big threshold that happens. At some point in your career, if you're successful, someone pays to see or hear your work. Up until that point, you got nothing to crow about. You can do endless demos. You can give your music away to your friends and family. Everybody's going to tell you you're a genius if you ask them because they want you to go away and they don't want to have to insult you. Yeah. So your friends and family are not going to be honest with you ever, and I don't care, no matter how honest they say they're being and how much you want to believe them, they're your friends and family.
Right.
But the moment that you create a product that someone wants to buy, the story changes. Until that moment, use your ego as a way to get as good at what you do as possible. But just know that until someone's willing to put out some money, you don't have a career.
Yeah. Well, even if they do pay for it, you still don't necessarily have a career.
Well, but that's why I'm saying you have to be objective. You have to be able to be realistic.
Right.
You know, if you sell 1,000 copies of an album, that's pretty cool.
Now, don't you?
But it's not going to, you know, change everybody's
life. I've got a suggestion for anybody.
Well, really quick, and before we get to your suggestion, don't you think people confuse ego and drive? You know, you should have a really tremendous drive. You should really be driven.
Well, but people with ego are usually not as hard of workers, in my experience.
I don't think so either.
No, the guys that I know that talk a lot, they're not hard workers.
But that's what I'm saying. Those people think that their ego is actually their drive, and it's not.
Well, but that's not just ego. That's overblown ego. The concept of ego itself is a necessary thing. What you're talking about is people without a whack egos.
Egomania.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's just so.
Well, it comes in all flavors. Your assertion that money is the transaction of selling something is a standard.
No, I'm just saying that's where you know whether your ego translates to something the public is receiving.
Totally.
In other words, you can think you're God's gift to the public as far as entertainment, but until someone actually pays to enjoy your work, it's just not true. And you can use that as a metric for whether you're successful or not.
It is a metric, but then you run into people in academia who their whole point is to be out on the fringe. They never wanted to sell anything anyway. And you actually run into a stronger strain of ego. That's sometimes true.
It's often that they weren't
avant-garde.
No, you know what? It's often I'm sorry, I have to just back up. It's often they just weren't able to sell anything. There aren't that many people who go. I mean, there are some, but most people don't go into academia because they insist, I don't ever want to sell something. And I have a lot of friends in academia. Most of them are there because it's a more stable, inviting career than trying to actually make it. As an artist.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely run into some elaborate constructs for why, you know, you're not popular.
I've got two suggestions.
Okay, go ahead.
Two suggestions, Bobby. If anybody's got an ego.
That's
one's,
right.
One's slightly funny and the other one's kind of true. Both true, actually. One, go and live in England. Go and live in England, live with English people, and try and put on your ego. It will stop in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because one, somebody will come up and play your ass right out the room,
right,
and then laugh at you and say, dude, you suck. And they'll tell it as it is. Or two, just go out into the sky one night when it's nice and dark into the desert and look up into the stars and go, man, I'm pretty insignificant.
So, that's true.
You know, that's it.
I just wanted to bring that up because I just think people need that. Check their egos in at the doors and don't confuse having
you know
a strong
what? There
ego.
There are plenty.
Confuse luck with talent.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people walking around in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, just certain that their moment is coming just because they're just so great. And, I mean, you can either go through life fooling yourself or not.
I know.
But putting on, I mean, who likes dealing with someone with an ego like that? I'd rather deal with someone, you know, equally talented but with a better attitude.
That's so true. You're right.
Better things come to people. Even if you have a huge ego, there are plenty of people who have a huge ego. I do. Everybody at some
level. Well, you do. We actually went to talk to you about it.
But part
this
of the trick
ego
is
intervention.
But you know what? There's such a
Rob, we're here because we love you.
Screw you guys.
And you must take that crown off.
But the thing is, an ego is okay if you use it to drive you and to become better at what you do and to constantly be striving to be the best at what you do. But you keep your ego in check.
There you go.
You don't want to – it's a very small industry, and we're always reminded with stories of, you know, what a small industry it is where, you know, you'll end up working with someone who knows other people you know. You don't want to have a reputation that spreads around as being hard to work with or an egomaniac or a know-it-all or any of that. That stuff catches up with you quick, and yes, it'll just boot you out of the industry.
No, you're absolutely
the
right.
The first rule is be nice. Try to think of it from the other guy's perspective.
But the thing is, there's one thing. The people with egos, if they hear that, they were going to change, maybe. Or they must have disguised their ego and stay in the industry. I prefer them to keep their ego and get kicked out the industry anyway.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Kind of run into them.
Well, listen, we're gonna move on to the next topic. I want a short story. I need to, because I just need some redemption here. Tell me a story about niceness, where someone was really nice to you, Bobby, in the music industry?
Wow, tons.
I know. Just tell us one.
On what level?
Any level. I'll tell you what. I'll start it, and you guys can follow. The nicest thing that ever happened to me in my career.
This sounds like a joke coming.
No, it's not a joke. But I was filling in for a tech on Michael McDonald. I was teching doing his backline, and we're doing some gigs in Dallas. And the guy that I was filling in for, he had the gig for like 20 years. So there was, you know, it was still his gig. I literally was just filling in for the weekend, and I'll never forget. We flew in. I didn't know anybody in the crew. I didn't know anybody, you know, in the band. And we went to the barbecue restaurant that they had opened for Michael McDonald and his crew. And so we go in there and I get my tray and, you know, they fill it up with food and I turn around and I go to look at where I was going to sit and not talk to anybody. and I turn around and I guess, you know, Michael saw me that I was kind of lost and didn't really have anybody to sit next to. And he said, "Hey, Mike, why don't you come sit right here next to me?"
Actually, he probably said, "Hey, Mark, come sit right here to me."
But you know what? That was, to me, that was absolutely the nicest thing.
And what did you say? "F*** my home."
I really wish I would have sat next to him.
That's a nice thing. That's very nice.
No, but it was just the fact that, you know, he didn't have to do that. I was the new crew guy, and I wasn't going to be around more than that weekend. And to me, that always will stick out because it was just such a – and some people are the nicest people in the world, and he's one of them. And it was just ultra cool. And I sat there, and, you know, inside I was going –
speaking of
cool.
Michael McDonald, has anyone heard the Grizzly Bear song featuring Michael McDonald?
No.
Yeah. It's interesting. The little sort of...
Is it really him?
Yeah. Yeah, he's on there. Yeah, the whole thing.
Funny, everybody is...
Anyway, there's a story. There's a nice story.
That's
Bobby,
a good story.
Tell me a good nice story.
Well, you know, I got to say that all the big artists I have worked with, luxury to work with, and actually I'm working with one right now, and I'll tell you... that they all have no ego, and they have the complete opportunity to have a massive ego because they've sold millions and millions and millions of records.
Right.
But they're the nicest, kindest, sweetest people. The person I'm working with right now, and I won't disclose the name, but recently my birthday, and he was overseas receiving a massive award for something. And he emailed me after his show. He said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, happy birthday, bud." Yeah, she said, "You old bugger." And that was it. And he didn't have to do that. He could have been getting, you know. And that's happened. All the nice, bigger stars that I've ever worked with have no ego, and they've always been very kind and accommodating and very generous.
What?
And, I mean, on multiple levels. So,
Ken, give me a nice story, Ken.
Nice story.
Redeem human beings for us.
When I was touring in my first band, our first tour, we were on the Warped Tour. We were a punk rock band. And we were the underdogs. You know, we weren't really invited to go on the tour. What we did was just show up and, you know, beg stage managers or, you know, whoever ran the stage. And, you know, more times than not, they'd let us play. And one of the bands, Papa Roach, they were moving from that tour to go to do Ozfest. And when they left, they gave us their meal tickets. So for the rest of the tour, we ate.
Oh, that's cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's very nice, yeah.
How about, Rob, how about you?
They're all bastards. No, I'd have to agree that a lot of times, I mean, it's not universally true, but a lot of times the bigger the artist I was working with, the nicer they were. Like Michael Jackson, for example, after I worked on his History album, and he sent everybody who worked on the album Platinum Records. And I've worked with lots of other artists where we kind of had to beg and scratch and everything to get a gold record or a platinum record afterwards. And this, he just sent it to me, sent it to the other guys I was working with, and unsolicited, just a nice thing. And I mean, that cost him a few $100 each, and he sent out, you know, quite a few of them. That was a really nice thing. I'd have to also say, when I first moved out here, when I was going to start with, I was in a band that Stevie was going to produce. I've talked about it before.
Right.
And I moved out here. I was 22 years old. I didn't know. I'd never been out of Philadelphia. I didn't know anybody out here. And there were two guys, Nate Watts, who's Stevie's bass player, and mm-hmm. Bobby Brooks, who's an engineer. They were assigned to work on our project. And the first day I moved out here, I mean, I was just a kid who had dropped out of college to check out the music scene out here. And they sort of took me under their wing and were nice to me and treated me like a person. And even though, I mean, these guys had, you know, a zillion Grammys and working on all these incredible records that I grew up completely idolizing. I mean, especially Nate. Nate had played on every huge record I loved,
right,
from Jackson 5 to Stevie and everything. And they just, like, took me in and immediately treated me like a person. And we ended up doing great work together. And I'm still really great friends with both of them. And it's... You know, now I'm getting close to 30. It's been years. I'm willing to say that was about 25 years ago, and I'm
talking
still
about ego, really age, and ego.
That's great.
I'm still really close friends with them, and it's amazing. And I try to do that to other people too. I mean, if you can make a good connection with someone, it's something that you can benefit from for life. Just knowing you have a friend.
That's true. Hey, Brandon, what about you?
I was just thinking about that. When I first moved here, I was in a little rock and roll band. And at the time, I was working – my day job was at the Jimmy Kimmel Live show when it first started about 5-6 years ago or whatever.
Cool.
And the house mixing guy there, Butch McCarge, you know, we sort of became friends, would talk. I'd always be, you know, pestering him, you know, to learn what I could. And he came over. We were doing a show at the Gig on Melrose, you know, small venue, nothing important or whatever. He came over, did our house mix for us and just – you know, made us sound better than I've ever sounded. You know, he just dialed in. He didn't have to do that. You know, he just came in.
Yeah.
Very nice guy, and it was great.
Cool.
Yeah, very nice.
Forrest, what about you?
There are several, but I have one that really stands out. Summer of 2003, radio stations around America would have these FM radio shows, like the one here was the KISS FM radio show at the Rose Bowl. We were doing one such show in Kansas City, Missouri. I was with NDRE at the time. We had just done our set. And headlining, I know Train was on the bill, and Def Leppard was headlining. And I was coming off the stage, and I almost literally stumbled over Rick Allen and Phil Collins from Def Leppard. And when I saw them, I mean, the rest of the band was like, you know, I don't know who these guys are. They were just kind of walking all around them. And then I'm staring at these guys going, you got to be kidding, because I grew up listening to Def Leppard since High and Dry. And I'm just like, okay, here are these guys. And before I could even say a word and have my starstruck moment, they completely ruined it. They were all like, man, that was really fantastic. We were standing over by the monitor board the whole show. What a great show. You sounded great. Oh, I couldn't believe it. It was amazing, because I'm sitting there with my mouth open, hoping not to this day that I didn't drool. Because all I'm thinking is Rick Allen and Phil Collins. I'm not sure I'm standing here right now. So next thing, I remember going, yeah, hey, Rick, you know, Phil. And they were like, oh, yeah. I said, I grew up listening to you guys. And I was really numb. Next thing I know, I can sort of remember them saying, hey, what are you doing right now? I was just going to go to catering. Want to come to our dressing room? Our dressing room's right back here. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I followed them to the dressing room, and Rick Savage had his girl straddling him, cleavage in his face. He couldn't say much. Joe Elliott was interesting. He didn't say anything. I didn't think he was that personable, really. And Vivian was really cool. Vivian Campbell. And I learned, don't mention Ronnie James Dio to him. I started launching into, you know, the last in line and all this stuff. And he really didn't want to talk about it, because apparently something went bad business-wise and it wasn't a good party. And Phil and Rick and I have, you know, been in touch ever since. Rick Allen is actually one of my best friends now. We both play drums with his wife, Lauren Monroe.
Wow.
But, you know, about a year, actually, during that time, we switched information. Rick Allen would actually call if I hadn't called and say, hey, man, I miss talking to you. I'm just wondering how you're doing. And I was living in Atlanta at the time. We kept up. And one day we were on during the tour, some months later, no, probably like a year later, we were going to do Atlanta Music Midtown. So I called up Rick and he was like, hey, man, what's going on with you? I said, I just got back to Atlanta. We're actually going over to Music Midtown. Really? We're playing Music Midtown. So next thing I know, we're over there and we coordinate, you know, to meet up and everything. And they went on after Journey. And when we started our set, we were only one stage away.
Right.
You know, Rick and Phil came over to our set and they stood there until they had to go. And they're like, hey, man, hey, we're going to go come over to the stage. And I'm like, okay. So we get done, and I walk up on stage,
And these, you know, big burly, you know, I'm living in Atlanta, Georgia. So you have, you know, guys with Confederate flags, security and everything. Right. And I'm like, I said, yeah, I'm a guest with Def, you know, for Def Leppard. Yeah, right, sure. You know, and I had all access because I was an artist.
Right.
They wouldn't even let me in. So Rick's wife yells, hey, Forrest, hey, what's going on? Let him in. So these guys are looking like a bunch of bozos. So now I go up on stage. Def Leppard's like singing, you know, at this point, Let's Get Rocked. And Phil Collins ripping this solo, and he sees me and acknowledges me over there. He's like, hey, you know, I'm like, wow. Big moment. After the show, I walk off with them. The security guard's looking like bigger bozos. And then I was hanging out with Leppard until like 4 a.m. I didn't get much sleep that night.
That's awesome.
And everybody that wasn't talkative before were very talkative that night.
That's awesome. Bill. What about you? Nice people.
Yeah, no. The bigger they are, the nicer they fall, I guess. I was working with Apple, and I went over to Herbie Hancock's studio, and we were dealing with some Logic things, and
I'm shocked.
Yeah. And real nice guys over at his place. And so I'm over there, and, you know, I helped them with the Logic stuff, and I came up on bebop. I mean, I'm bebop drums. I love bebop. And Tony Williams is my favorite drummer in the world. And so I asked Herbie, geez, you know, what was it like when, see, for those of you that don't know, Miles Davis, amazing band in the 60s, he hired Tony Williams, who was 16 years old, to play. And I asked Herbie, I said, what was it like when you first played with Tony Williams? And it took him a half hour to tell the story.
Wow.
And I'll never forget it.
Wow.
He told me every single detail because it was meaningful to him, and he could see that little piece of history was something meaningful to me. Kindness.
Yeah.
Kindness, and a lot of guys in town are very kind.
Yeah, and you know what? I can honestly say, as far as Herbie goes, 4 days ago I was in the dentist chair next to him. And he was not telling any story. But that is actually true. I looked over because the door was open between the room I was in and the next room over. And I saw a guy laying there with the dentist climbing inside his mouth. I thought, wow, that looks a lot like Herbie Hancock. And it actually was him.
Well, the thing, just the one side note about Herbie is that
he's got beautiful teeth.
People know him as a jazz piano player.
Right.
And jazz people tend to be somewhat small in their vision at times. That's just about the jazz, right? Well, Herbie has a whole macro tower that is loaded with every single plug-in known to man. Because what he does is, in his spare time, is find new sounds. So there he is, a jazz legend who spends all this time doing new things on with computers, and he's got to be in his mid-60s anyway.
Wow.
And I just admire that kind of pioneering. I think it's amazing.
And he's always done that, even back like Rocket, in the Wayframe days.
Yeah. Always did it. Rocket. It was a great record.
Well, I'm glad we all got to tell our stories of nice people because I feel better. I didn't want to leave it on the whole ego
thing. Negative
thing.
Nah.
You know, and I got to tell one more nice story, all right, because this is someone in our podcast. The first time I worked with Martin, he was absolutely one of the most generous people I've ever worked with.
Martin Page.
Yeah, Martin Page. Yeah,
very sweet guy.
He was, I mean, it was like we bonded as friends just right then and there. It was really cool. He was just such a nice guy. He was, you know, easygoing and he's one of those kind of guys that's just
a sweet, soft,
just a good heart.
You know what? If you have a long enough career, you'll realize that you'll run into the same people at different times in your career, and sometimes with a long gap in between. You know, you might work with someone and not see them for 10, 15 years and then re-encounter them. And the better the reputation that you lay out for yourself and the better feeling people have about you as time goes on, it ends up benefiting you as a person and a professional years down the road. And there have been people who I haven't seen for 10 years and I get back together with them and, you know, we swap stories of what's happened in the 10 years since we saw each other, and then we're happy to be working together again. There is absolutely no reason not to make an effort to try to lay out, you know, a good reputation for yourself early on.
All right. Well, you know what? It's... We're gonna call it. Hey, Rob, you working on anything you can talk about?
Actually, there is something very cool going on.
Nice.
That Bobby and I have both been working
yes.
on.
Yes. And I'll show you the iPhone app as we speak. Carry on. No, it's not really.
Should we tell them what it is?
Go, why don't you?
Okay. Well, we've been hinting at it for a long time, and I think I've made mention of parts of it, but there is an international songwriting competition called City Love Music. Available City Love. At citylovemusic.com. And it's basically a contest where you can write a song about your favorite city or your least favorite city or whatever. You just write a song about a city.
With vocals.
With vocals. And
Leadville, Colorado, and
you can win $10,000 for the best song, and you can also make a music video and win $5,000 for the best video. It's completely voted on by the public. But
you earn royalties on the songs you've
You earn royalties because the songs will end up on CDs. There's a lot of information there at the site at citylovemusic.com. But the reason this site is significant is, well, for me and Bobby, for me, I designed and built the website, coded it from scratch.
He did code it from scratch.
And it took me 5 months, and it was a lot of work, but it's a really sophisticated website. Any music you upload gets converted to MP3s with all the proper ID3 tags, and the site can stream audio and video to any browser or an iPhone. It's a really sophisticated site, and it's my first, so it was a heck of a learning experience. Yeah. But
that's just amazing, Rob. Your first site is this giant
thing. I had to
write
friggin' YouTube, basically, from scratch.
Is there really an app? It's not what it is. It's a link that you can download.
Okay. The website works on an iPhone. It's not 100% optimized for iPhone, but it gets better each day. I don't have an iPhone, so I've been testing it on
Bobby's. Why don't you tell people what it is, the URL, one more time?
Oh, citylovemusic.com. But Bobby's involvement, well, Bobby's the one who actually got me into the whole thing. I keep forgetting to thank him.
Well, you don't have to thank me. It's I'll give you a little bit of history. Once, maybe back in like podcast 62, I think it was.
Right.
You said, "What are you doing now?" I said, "I'm working on a little internet project."
Oh, that's right, because Forrest is in on this.
Forrest is going to play drums on it. I called up Forrest, and in a nutshell, citylovemusic.com is the site's name, and my friend, who's actually my partner on it, he got me involved. He called me up and said, "Hey, do you want to write some music for this?" Which I did. I wrote four template songs, let's call it, for people to write to about Sydney, the city. And I got Forrest, my mate, to come and play drums on,
love
which he
that
did.
Song, man. Ah,
you're
I
a,
love that song.
You're a kind soul. That's very kind of you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, really, yeah, I mean it.
Well, you can hear that song at citylovemusic.com.
Oh, okay. And you can hear Forrest play. Matter of fact,
it was fun.
You can actually hear him play.
And you can download his drums solo, ISO. You can download the stems of Forrest.
Yeah,
and
write his drums.
Yeah, and you better give me some serious.
Do you want to get paid for that? Oh, hang on a second.
And you can see Rob's first website.
That, by the way, is one of the coolest things about the site. There are four, they're called collaboration songs, which Mr. Summerfield here wrote.
Great song, man. Great
but yeah, the idea is, if you register as a songwriter, you can actually download the stem. So you can download just the drums or the bass or the keys or whatever for each of these songs and write your own song. Or you can write a completely original song for a chance to win $10,000 in royalties.
But it's actually pretty cool. You can actually get yourself a bit of exposure doing it. And they've got all the viral. You got all the...
But this, I mean, talk about a learning experience. I wrote the Flash player for the site. The site actually auto-detects whether you have Flash or QuickTime, and it automatically senses what your browser is capable of and makes a bunch of decisions based on that, and I had to write the Flash player from scratch. For me, it started out as a learning experience, but it ended up being a pretty cool project. And the four songs that are on there, I've now heard them a billion times each, and I have to say, Bobby came up with some catchy stuff.
Oh, you're very kind.
I'm not completely sick of them.
No.
About half. Well, you have to realize one of the things, when I first came up with the audio player, one of the things I had a hard time with was the stop button. So the songs would start to play, and there was no way to stop them. And if I click on them again, a second copy would start playing. So I was often hearing 10 copies of these songs simultaneously. But didn't get sick of them. They're pretty good.
All right. I think Mike was going to play us one.
We already have some submissions on the site, and it hasn't even started to be promoted
yet. It's actually not
up
yet, is it? Really?
Well, it is up. The site will be, by the time this podcast posts.
Hey, you got it. That's it. Exactly. There it is.
By the time the podcast posts, we'll have a bunch of advertising out there.
Well, not yet. I think I'm
No, I mean, it's good. Listen, you guys got to check this out because I'm just impressed, with everything that's going on. But, Rob, your site's genius, and you wrote the player, and the graphics are cool. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Very good job.
Especially seeing – because I was kind of privileged to see a couple early versions. You pounded this thing out quite nicely.
Thank you. It came together. I have always, and it sounds weird to say it, but in my career, I've always tried to bite off more than I should have on projects. I mean, it started from, the first artist I had worked with was Stevie, and then every step along the way, I tried to always sort of scare myself a little bit. And this project scared me in the beginning. I mean, I was just learning HTML, the basics of it, when I agreed to do this, and I had to learn a lot of stuff.
I hope Hilton doesn't hear
this,
because I said to him...
did you tell him I'd done this a million times?
I said, Rob, is that... God, please, this is easy for you. He's like, okay, if you say so. I said, yeah.
Well, thank you for putting your reputation online.
But you know what?
Hopefully Hilton doesn't hear this podcast.
For Rob, anything is easy.
I knew he hadn't done this, and I wouldn't lie. I knew he hadn't done exactly this site, but I knew he had completely the ability and the talent and ability to do it.
I'm impressed.
I wasn't going to let a friend down. That would have been horrible.
Do you do taxes?
I do not.
I don't do taxes. You have to earn money to do taxes.
Actually, but if you scan them into the City Love site, it'll do your taxes. It's very sophisticated.
All right. Well, that's great. We're going to have to
check it out.
CityLoveMusic.com.
Write a song.
Bill.
Dude, I'm in Austin, Texas at least 3/4 of each month right now, building this big audio channel. It's similar. It's got a whole team of software developers and some other stuff under it. But a lot of the stuff that I've been doing in conjunction with that are visual things, Keynote, PowerPoint,
all right,
some of these things. And I'm enjoying pressing those apps to the edge.
That's cool.
So I've always had one leg in visual, and that's part of it's enjoyable. But
great.
This thing in Austin is big and scary. Mm-hmm. And
you'll tell us when you can talk about it.
Yeah, when it's worth saying something about it. I miss doing music. Great. I have to pull that back up into my life somehow. But
great.
It's only been a couple months.
Forrest, how about you?
I'm tracking on my record. That's what I'm doing. I'm
great.
giving some love to Forrest. Did some drumming.
Forrest love.
Yeah, it's overdue. So
that's cool.
That's what I'm doing. So I'm in piano and synth land for a while.
Great.
Super.
And Ken, Dreamers, man.
Yeah. Just finished pre-production for my new record with my band Dreamers. Start tracking drums in 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yay. Just moved into a new house. I'm really jazzed on
that. Wow.
Lots of yard work and painting, but I got my detached garage, so nice. Studio in the future.
Cool.
I'm
going to
be
good enough. If I can figure out how to build it.
Brandon, what do you up to?
Aside from work, I'm doing sound design for these animated sections for this this documentary called Numb to Life. It's about the prescription drug industry.
Okay.
It's a fun little thing.
Wow.
It's
cool.
An interesting documentary, actually.
I'm basically something I'm going to have in my collection.
Cool.
Yeah,
well,
so doing
good.
That.
So
and,
that's great.
And did a little, just finished a little... mnemonic or sound logo for my friend's film company.
Great.
Yeah, it was fun to do.
And he's also working on a really big project that we cannot talk about.
It's the same one I haven't been able to mention.
But it's huge. I just want to tell everybody, it's huge. See, that's a little teaser, so when you do talk about it. And Bobby, how about you?
What I'm doing is I'm just finishing off the City Love tail bits of this,
right,
this last couple of days. And I'm actually working with this artist I've been telling you about, and it's kind of getting nice. I've actually done a couple of tracks with him now.
Nice.
Maybe this will work out, and maybe hopefully one day I'll be able to say it's actually going ahead and really we'll be able to talk about it.
That'd be good.
Which would be fantastic. And I'm also in the starting stage of doing a sample library with a friend of mine who has, I told you about, Andrew Crest, who has LA Scoring Strings.
Right.
And so basically that's what I'm doing in the meantime on the periphery, and I'm just also at the moment doing – what music projects am I doing? I've got five R&B tracks to do.
Wow.
And that's about it.
Also, Bobby won't tell you this, but within the next few days, if you go to citylovemusic.com.
I won't tell you this.
I'll tell him. You'll be able to see videos of Bobby teaching you how to use the site.
Nice!
He's got his new low haircut and everything.
Nice!
Actually, I'll tell you something real funny.
This
was funny. I said to Rob, do you mind lending me a light? Because I don't have a really good fill-in light. Filming at my studio. He says, yeah, sure, I'll come and bring you a light. So I start shooting this bloody video, and I really really suck at it because I'm trying to read it and I realize I've got to add a little bit. But either way, so I take the first part of it and I think, ah, you know, I'll fill in the last bit tomorrow, and which was Monday, right. And I started this on Sunday. I'll fill in the last bit tomorrow and, you know, just edit the two together and be fine. In between that, I forgot I have a lady comes to my house to cut my hair. So she comes to my house at 11 o'clock to cut
she
my hair.
She comes to your house?
Yeah.
And it was a major haircut.
Only
was
in LA, I guess.
Only in LA. No, she's actually... No. So she came to my house, cut my hair.
She's actually a what?
A haircutter.
No, she's she moved out of town. And she lives a long way away. She said, oh, you know, I'll just come and do your hair. You know, she's a sweetie, but that's beside the point. So she comes to do my hair.
Expensive haircut.
No kidding.
No. And I go, okay, cool. So I go back in the studio very happy. I say, oh, let's switch this video camera on. So we're going to pick it up. Okay, da, da, da. Yeah, that should work. And I go and put them in my final cut. I go, a loser. One's gollywogging, one's like, what's going on here? It's crazy. I was like,
little continuity problems.
Little continuity problems. Like,
great.
So I got her back to come and stick it back on.
See,
she made me a wig now.
Just do a little time lapse.
That's right.
That's what I said.
That's what I said, but it was in the wrong order. It went from long to short.
Just digitally. Just do it digitally. Just add it back in.
Add a plug-in.
There you go. Yeah.
It's called a re-record.
It's quite fun.
But you will be able to see Mr. Summerfield.
Oh, God, no, you won't.
In the flesh.
Nice. That's very good.
What are you doing, Mike?
Well, let's see. Tomorrow night, I fly out to API. I'm going to spend some time out there with the API guys and working on doing some video things, and I'll tell you all about it when I can tell you all about it. All right. Well, hey, listen, if you have any comments or questions for any of the guys here on the panel, feel free to reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And we do eventually get it to you because somebody sent actually a gentleman named Will sent Bill a manifesto. And so, Will, I did forward it on to Bill, and he will send you a reply.
Still making my way through.
It was actually, yeah, it was pretty cool. But, you know, and we got to give some shout-outs to some of the guys that have been leaving some really nice things on our Facebook page, like Thomas and Daniel and Noel and Andrew and Dexter and Mark and Lee. So we're up to like 9 listeners now, so that's good.
It gets very romper roomish when you run down the names. Like, and we see Teddy and Billy and Joey.
Where are all the ladies, Mike?
Yeah, we don't really pull the chicks, do we? Yeah, you're talking about the wrong things, I think.
I mean, they're there in the industry, you know, somewhere. Somewhere out there, you know.
On the wrong side of the mic.
You know what? No, a lot of times when we talk about clients, we seem to be talking about
ladies. Well, that's true. You're absolutely right.
So they're the bosses.
They're the bosses. If you want to reach us, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Feel free to check us out on our Facebook page. And all right, well, for myself and all the guys, you take it easy, and we'll catch you next time.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Wow!